This problem received attention from Rishis. They found helpful not only a combination of metals, but also of plants and most effective of all faultless jewels of not less than 2 carats. The preventive uses of astrology have seldom been seriously studied outside of India. One little known fact is that the proper jewels, metals, or plant preparations are valueless unless the required weight is secured, and unless these remedial agents are worn next to the skin. Sir, of course I shall take your advice and get a bangle. I am intrigued at the thought of outwitting a planet. For general purposes I counsel the use of an armlet made of gold, silver, and copper. But for a specific purpose I want you to get one of silver and lead. Sri Yukteswar added careful directions. Guruji, what specific purpose do you mean? The stars are about to take an unfriendly interest in you, Mukunda. Fear not, you shall be protected. In about a month your liver will cause you much trouble. The illness is scheduled to last for 6 months, but your use of an astrological armlet will shorten the period to 24 days. I sought out a jeweler the next day, and was soon wearing the bangle. My health was excellent, Master's prediction slipped from my mind. He left Serandpur to visit Benares. 30 days after our conversation, I felt a sudden pain in the region of my liver. The following weeks were a nightmare of excruciating pain. Reluctant to disturb my guru, I thought I would bravely endure my trial alone. But 23 days of torture weakened my resolution. I entrained for Benares. The Sri Yukteswar greeted me with unusual warmth, but gave me no opportunity to tell him my woes in private. Many devotees visited Master that day, just for a darshan. Ill and neglected, I sat in a corner. It was not until after the evening meal that all guests had departed. My guru summoned me to the octagonal balcony of the house. You must have come about your liver disorder. Sri Yukteswar's gaze was averted. He walked to and fro, occasionally intercepting the moonlight. Let me see, you have been ailing for 24 days, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
Please do the stomach exercise I have taught you. If you knew the extent of my suffering, Master, you would not ask me to exercise. Nevertheless, I made a feeble attempt to obey him. You say you have pain, I say you have none. How can such contradictions exist? My guru looked at me inquiringly. I was dazed and then overcome with joyful relief. No longer could I feel the continuous torments that had kept me nearly sleepless for weeks. At Sri Yukteswar's words the agony vanished as though it had never been. I started to kneel at his feet in gratitude, but he quickly prevented me. Don't be childish. Get up and enjoy the beauty of the moon over the Ganges. But Master's eyes were twinkling happily as I stood in silence beside him. I understood by his attitude that he wanted me to feel that not he, but God, had been the healer. I wear even now the heavy silver and lead bangle, a memento of that day long past, ever cherished when I found anew that I was living with a personage indeed superhuman. On later occasions, when I brought my friends to Sri Yukteswar for healing, he invariably recommended jewels or the bangle, extolling their use as an act of astrological wisdom. I had been prejudiced against astrology from my childhood, partly because I observed that many people are sequentially attached to it, and partly because of a prediction made by our family astrologer: you will marry 3 times, being twice a widower. I brooded over the matter, feeling like a goat awaiting sacrifice before the temple of triple matrimony. You may as well be resigned to your fate, my brother Ananta had remarked. Your written horoscope has correctly stated that you would fly from home toward the Himalayas during your early years, but would be forcibly returned. There, outwitting the stars, forecast of your marriages is also bound to be true. A clear intuition came to me one night that the prophecy was wholly false. I set fire to the horoscope scroll, placing the ashes in a paper bag on which I wrote, "Seeds of past karma cannot germinate if they are roasted in the divine fires of wisdom." I put the bag in a conspicuous spot, and to immediately read my defiant comment. You cannot destroy truth as easily as you have burnt this paper scroll. My brother laughed scornfully.
It is a fact that on three occasions before I reached manhood, my family tried to arrange my betrothal. Each time I refused to fall in with the plans, knowing that my love for God was more overwhelming than any astrological persuasion from the past. The deeper the self-realization of a man, the more he influences the whole universe by his subtle spiritual vibrations, and the less he himself is affected by the phenomenal flux. These words of masters often returned inspiringly to my mind. Occasionally I told astrologers to select my worst periods, according to planetary indications, and I would still accomplish whatever task I set myself. It is true that my success at such times has been accompanied by extraordinary difficulties. But my conviction has always been justified. Faith in the divine protection, and the right use of man's God-given will, are forces formidable beyond any the inverted bowl can muster. The starry inscription at one's birth, I came to understand, is not that man is a puppet of his past. Its message is rather a prod to pride. The very heavens seek to arouse man's determination to be free from every limitation. God created each man as a soul, dowered with individuality, hence essential to the universal structure, whether in the temporary role of pillar or parasite. His freedom is final and immediate, if he so wills. It depends not on outer but inner victories. Sri Yukteswar discovered the mathematical application of a 24,000-year equinoctial cycle to our present age. The cycle is divided into an ascending arc and a descending arc, each of 12,000 years. Within each arc fall four yugas or ages, called Kali, Dwapara, Treta, and Satya, corresponding to the Greek ideas of iron, bronze, silver, and golden ages. My guru determined by various calculations that the last Kali Yuga or Iron Age, of the ascending arc, started about, AD 500. The Iron Age, 1,200 years in duration, is a span of materialism. It ended about AD 1700. That year ushered in Dwapara Yuga, a 2,400 year period of electrical and atomic energy developments, the age of telegraph, radio, airplanes, and other space annihilators. The 3,600 year period of Treta Yuga will start in AD 4100. Its age will be marked by common knowledge of telepathic communications and other time annihilators. During the 4,800 years of Satya Yuga, final age in an ascending arc, the intelligence of a man will be completely developed. He will work in harmony with the divine plan. A descending arc of 12,000 years, starting with a descending golden age of 4,800 years, then begins for the world. Man gradually sinks into ignorance. These cycles are the eternal rounds of Maya, the contrasts and relativities of the phenomenal universe. A man, one by one, escapes from creation's prison of duality as he awakens to consciousness of his inseverable divine unity with the Creator. Master enlarged my understanding not only of astrology but of the world's scriptures. Placing the holy texts on the spotless table of his mind, he was able to dissect them with the scalpel of intuitive reasoning, and to separate errors and interpolations of scholars from the truths as originally expressed by the prophets. Fix one's vision on the end of the nose. This inaccurate interpretation of a Bhagavad Gita stanza, a inverted exclamation mark widely accepted by Eastern pundits and Western translators, used to arouse master's droll criticism. The path of a yogi is singular enough as it is, he remarked. Why counsel him that he must also make himself cross-eyed? The true meaning of Nasikagram is origin of the nose, not end of the nose. The nose begins at the point between the two eyebrows, the seat of spiritual vision. Because of one Sankhya aphorism, Iswarasya, a lord of creation cannot be deduced or God is not proved, a inverted exclamation mark many scholars call the whole philosophy atheistical. The verse is not nihilistic, Sri Yukteswar explained. It merely signifies that to the unenlightened man, dependent on his senses for all final judgments, proof of God must remain unknown and therefore non-existent. True Sankhya followers, with unshakable insight born of meditation, understand that the Lord is both existent and knowable. Other Hindu scriptures place the present world age as occurring within the Kali Yuga of a much longer universal cycle than the simple 24,000-year equinoctial cycle with which Sri Yukteswar was concerned. The universal cycle of the scriptures is 4,300,560,000 years in extent, and measures out a day of creation or the length of life assigned to our planetary system in its present form. This vast figure given by the rishis is based on a relationship between the length of the solar year and a multiple of pi, 3.1416, the ratio of the circumference to the diameter of a circle. The lifespan for a whole universe, according to the ancient seers, is 3,141,590,000 solar years, or one age of Brahma. Scientists estimate the present age of the Earth to be about 2 billion years, basing their conclusions on a study of lead pockets left as a result of radioactivity in rocks. The Hindu scriptures declare that an Earth such as ours is dissolved for one of two reasons. The inhabitants as a whole become either completely good or completely evil. The world mind thus generates a power which releases the captive atoms held together as an earth. Dire pronouncements are occasionally published regarding an imminent end of the world. The latest prediction of doom was given by Reverend Charles G. Long of Pasadena, who publicly set the day of judgment for September 21, 1945. United Press reporters asked my opinion. I explained that world cycles follow an orderly progression according to a divine plan. No earthly dissolution is in sight. 2 billion years of ascending and descending equinoctial cycles are yet in store for our planet in its present form. The figures given by the rishis for the various world ages deserve careful study in the West. The magazine Time called them reassuring statistics. Master expounded the Christian Bible with a beautiful clarity. It was from my Hindu guru, unknown to the roll call of Christian membership, that I learned to perceive the deathless essence of the Bible, and to understand the truth in Christ's assertion, surely the most thrillingly intransigent ever uttered, "Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away." The great masters of India mold their lives by the same godly ideals which animated Jesus. These men are his proclaimed kin. "Whosoever shall do the will of my Father which is in heaven, the same is my brother, and sister, and mother. If ye continue in my word," Christ pointed out, "then are ye my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Freeman all, lords of themselves, the yogi crusts of India are part of the immortal fraternity, those who have attained a liberating knowledge of the One Father. The Adam and Eve story is incomprehensible to me. I observed with considerable heat one day in my early struggles with the allegory. Why did God punish not only the guilty pair, but also the innocent unborn generations? Master was more amused by my vehemence than my ignorance. "Genesis is deeply symbolic, and cannot be grasped by a literal interpretation," he explained. "Its tree of life is the human body. The spinal cord is like an upturned tree, with man's hair as its roots, and efferent nerves as branches. The tree of the nervous system bears many enjoyable fruits, or sensations of sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. In these, man may rightfully indulge, but he was forbidden the experience of sex. The apple at the center of the bodily garden. A section, the serpent represents the coiled up spinal energy which stimulates the sex nerves. Adam is reason, and Eve is feeling. When the emotion or Eve consciousness in any human being is overpowered by the sex impulse, his reason or Adam also succumbs. God created the human species by materializing the bodies of man and woman through the force of his will. He endowed the new species with the power to create children in a similar immaculate or divine manner. Because his manifestation in the individualized soul had hitherto been limited to animals, instinct-bound and lacking the potentialities of full reason, God made the first human bodies, symbolically called Adam and Eve. To these, for advantageous upward evolution, He transferred the souls or divine essence of two animals. A inverted exclamation mark in Adam or man, reason predominated, in Eve or woman, feeling was ascendant. Thus was expressed the duality or polarity which underlies the phenomenal worlds. Reason and feeling remain in a heaven of cooperative joy so long as the human mind is not tricked by the serpentine energy of animal propensities. The human body was therefore not solely a result of evolution from beasts, but was produced by an act of special creation by God. The animal forms were too crude to express full divinity. The human being was uniquely given a tremendous mental capacity, the thousand-petaled lotus of the brain, as well as acutely awakened occult centers in the spine. God, or the divine consciousness present within the first created bear, counseled them to enjoy all human sensibilities, but not to put their concentration on touch sensations. A section these were banned in order to avoid the development of the sex organs, which would enmesh humanity in the inferior animal method of propagation. The warning not to revive subconsciously present bestial memories was not heeded. Resuming the way of brute procreation, Adam and Eve fell from the state of heavenly joy natural to the original perfect man. Knowledge of good and evil refers to the cosmic dualistic compulsion. Falling under the sway of Maya through misuse of his feeling and reason, or even Adam consciousness, man relinquishes his right to enter the heavenly garden of divine self-sufficiency. The personal responsibility of every human being is to restore his parents or dual nature to a unified harmony or Eden. As Sri Yukta's war ended his discourse, I glanced with new respect at the pages of Genesis. "Dear Master," I said, "for the first time I feel a proper filial obligation toward Adam and Eve." Chapter 17. Sassy and the Three Sapphires. "Because you and my son think so highly of Swami Sri Yukta's war, I will take a look at him." The tone of voice used by Dr. Narayan Chandra Roy implied that he was humoring the whim of half-wits. I concealed my indignation, in the best traditions of the proselyta. My companion, a veterinary surgeon, was a confirmed agnostic. His young son Santosh had implored me to take an interest in his father. So far my invaluable aid had been a bit on the invisible side. Dr. Roy accompanied me the following day to the Serampore Hermitage. After Master had granted him a brief interview, marked for the most part by stoic silence on both sides, the visitor brusquely departed. "Why bring a dead man to the ashram?" Sri Yukteswar looked at me inquiringly as soon as the door had closed on the Calcutta skeptic. "Sir, the doctor is very much alive, but in a short time he will be dead." I was shocked. "Sir, this will be a terrible blow to his son. Santosh yet hopes for time to change his father's materialistic views. I beseech you, Master, to help the man." "Very well, for your sake." My guru's face was impassive. "The proud horse doctor is far gone in diabetes, although he does not know it. In 15 days he will take to his bed. The physicians will give him up for lost. His natural time to leave this earth is 6 weeks from today. Due to your intercession, however, on that date he will recover. But there is one, 181, condition. You must get him to wear an astrological bangle. He will doubtless object as violently as one of his horses before an operation." Master chuckled. After a silence, during which I wondered how Santosh and I could best employ the arts of cajolery on the recalcitrant doctor, Sri Yukteswar made further disclosures. "As soon as the man gets well, advise him not to eat meat. He will not heed this counsel, however, and in 6 months, just as he is feeling at his best, he will drop dead. Even that 6 month extension of life is granted him only because of your plea." The following day I suggested to Santosh that he order an armlet at the jeweler's. It was ready in a week, but Dr. Roy refused to put it on. "I am in the best of health. You will never impress me with these astrological superstitions." The doctor glanced at me belligerently. I recalled with amusement that Master had justifiably compared the man to a balky horse. Another 7 days passed. The doctor, suddenly ill, meekly consented to wear the bangle. 2 weeks later, the physician in attendance told me that his patient's case was hopeless. He supplied harrowing details of the ravages inflicted by diabetes. I shook my head. My guru has said that, after a sickness lasting 1 month, Dr. Roy will be well. The physician stared at me incredulously. But he sought me out a fortnight later, with an apologetic air. Dr. Roy has made a complete recovery, he exclaimed. It is the most amazing case in my experience. Never before have I seen a dying man show such an inexplicable comeback. Your guru must indeed be a healing prophet. After one interview with Dr. Roy, during which I repeated Sri Yukteswar's advice about a meatless diet, I did not see the man again for 6 months. He stopped for a chat one evening as I sat on the piazza of my family home on Gupta Road. Tell your teacher that by eating meat frequently, I have wholly regained my strength. His unscientific ideas on diet have not influenced me. It was true that Dr. Roy looked a sassy and the three sapphires, picture of health. But the next day Santosh came running to me from his home on the next block. This morning father dropped dead. This case was one of my strangest experiences with master. He healed the rebellious veterinary surgeon in spite of his disbelief, and extended the man's natural term on earth by 6 months, just because of my earnest supplication. Sri Yukteswar was boundless in his kindness when confronted by the urgent prayer of a devotee. It was my proudest privilege to bring college friends to meet my guru. Many of them would lay aside at least in the ashram exclamation mark their fashionable academic cloak of religious skepticism. One of my friends, Sassy, spent a number of happy weekends in Serampore. Master became immensely fond of the boy, and lamented that his private life was wild and disorderly. Sassy, unless you reform, 1 year hence you will be dangerously ill. Sri Yukteswar gazed at my friend with affectionate exasperation. Mukunda is the witness, don't say later that I didn't warn you. Sassy laughed. Master, I will leave it to you to interest a sweet charity of cosmos in my own sad case. My spirit is willing but my will is weak. You are my only savior on earth, I believe in nothing else. At least you should wear a 2-carat blue sapphire. It will help you. I can't afford one. Anyhow, dear Guruji, if trouble comes, I fully believe you will protect me. In a year you will bring 3 sapphires, Sri Yukteswar replied cryptically. They will be of no use then. Variations on this conversation took place regularly. I can't reform. Sassy would say in comical despair. And my trust in you, master, is more precious to me than any stone. A year later I was visiting my guru at the Calcutta home of his disciple, Naren Babu. About 10 o'clock in the morning, as Sri Yukteswar and I were sitting quietly in the second floor parlor, I heard the front door open. Master straightened, stiffly. It is that Sassy, he remarked gravely. The year is now up, both his lungs are gone. He has ignored my counsel, tell him I don't want to see him. Half stunned by Sri Yukteswar's sternness, I raced down the stairway. Sassy was ascending. Oh Mukunda! I do hope Master is here, I had a hunch he might be. Yes, but he doesn't wish to be disturbed. Sassy burst into tears and brushed past me. He threw himself at Sri Yukteswar's feet, placing the 3 beautiful sapphires. Omniscient Guru, the doctors say I have galloping tuberculosis. They give me no longer than 3 more months. I humbly implore your aid, I know you can heal me. Isn't it a bit late now to be worrying over your life? Depart with your jewels, their time of usefulness is past. Master then sat sphinx-like in an unrelenting silence, punctuated by the boy's sobs for mercy. An intuitive conviction came to me that Sri Yukteswar was merely testing the depth of Sassy's faith in the divine healing power. I was not surprised a tense hour later when Master turned a sympathetic gaze on my prostrate friend. Get up, Sassy, what a commotion you make in other people's houses. Return your sapphires to the jewelers, they are an unnecessary expense now. But get an astrological bangle and wear it. Fear not, in a few weeks you shall be well. Sassy's smile illumined his tear-marred face like sudden sun over a sodden landscape. Beloved guru, shall I take the medicines prescribed by the doctors? Shri Yukteswar's glance was longanimous. Just as you wish, drink them or discard them, it does not matter. It is more possible for the sun and moon to interchange their positions than for you to die of tuberculosis. He added abruptly, go now, before I change my mind. With an agitated bow, my friend hastily departed. I visited him several times during the next few weeks, and was aghast to find his condition increasingly worse. Sassy and the three sapphires. Sassy cannot last through the night. These words from his physician, and the spectacle of my friend, now reduced almost to a skeleton, sent me post-haste to Serampore. My guru listened coldly to my tearful report. Why do you come here to bother me? You have already heard me assure Sassy of his recovery. I bowed before him in great awe, and retreated to the door. Shri Yukteswar said no parting word, but sank into silence, his unwinking eyes half open, their vision fled to another world. I returned at once to Sassy's home in Calcutta. With astonishment I found my friend sitting up, drinking milk. Oh Mukunda, what a miracle! 4 hours ago I felt Master's presence in the room, my terrible symptoms immediately disappeared. I feel that through his grace I am entirely well. In a few weeks Sassy was stouter and in better health than ever before. But his singular reaction to his healing had an ungrateful tinge. He seldom visited Shri Yukteswar again. My friend told me one day that he so deeply regretted his previous mode of life that he was ashamed to face Master. I could only conclude that Sassy's illness had had the contrasting effect of stiffening his will and impairing his manners. The first 2 years of my course at Scottish Church College were drawing to a close. My classroom attendance had been very spasmodic, what little studying I did was only to keep peace with my family. My two private tutors came regularly to my house, I was regularly absent, I can discern at least this one regularity in my scholastic career. In India 2 successful years of college bring an intermediate arts diploma, the student may then look forward to another 2 years and his AB degree. The intermediate arts final examinations loomed ominously ahead. I fled to Puri, where my guru was spending a few weeks. Vaguely hoping that he would sanction my non-appearance at the finals, I related my embarrassing unpreparedness. But Master smiled consolingly. You have wholeheartedly pursued your spiritual duties, and could not help neglecting your college work. Apply yourself diligently to your books for the next week, you shall get through your ordeal without failure. I returned to Calcutta, firmly suppressing all reasonable doubts that occasionally arose with unnerving ridicule. Surveying the mountain of books on my table, I felt like a traveler lost in a wilderness. A long period of meditation brought me a labor-saving inspiration. Opening each book at random, I studied only those pages which lay thus exposed. Pursuing this course during 18 hours a day for a week, I considered myself entitled to advise all succeeding generations on the art of cramming. The following days in the examination halls were a justification of my seemingly haphazard procedure. I passed all the tests, though by a hairbreadth. The congratulations of my friends and family were ludicrously mixed with ejaculations betraying their astonishment. On his return from Puri, Shri Yukteswar gave me a pleasant surprise. Your Calcutta studies are now over. I will see that you pursue your last 2 years of university work right here in Serampore. I was puzzled. Sir, there is no Bachelor of Arts course in this town. Serampore College, the sole institution of higher learning, offered only a 2-year course in intermediate arts. Master smiled mischievously. I am too old to go about collecting donations to establish an AB college for you. I guess I shall have to arrange the matter through someone else. 2 months later Professor Howells, president of Serampore College, publicly announced that he had succeeded in raising sufficient funds to offer a 4-year course. Serampore College became a branch affiliation of the University of Calcutta. I was one of the first students to enroll in Serampore as an AB candidate. Guruji, how kind you are to me. I have been longing to leave Calcutta and be near you every day in Serampore. Professor Howells does not dream how much he owes to your, Sassy and the Three Sapphires, silent help. Sri Yukteswar gazed at me with mock severity. Now you won't have to spend so many hours on trains, what a lot of free time for your studies. Perhaps you will become less of a last-minute grammar and more of a scholar. But somehow his tone lacked conviction. Chapter 18. A Mohammedan Wonder Worker.